No one would have believed that in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed that we were being scrutinised as someone with a microscope studying creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even considered the possibilities of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this Earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely they drew their plans against us. Welcome to another episode of Better Show. I am Grandad. Have you actually chosen your name?
No, I haven't.
Hello. Do you have a name?
Can I just use Jordan?
If you want.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm joined by Jordan today. And if that intro didn't describe it well enough, we are covering War of the Worlds.
Yes.
It's going to be our two-parter and Jordan will be guest star for the first episode. Ooh. So welcome. So, War of the Worlds, we were talking a bit about it leading up to this episode, and something that you mentioned, and that piece of music is from the musical adaptation of War of the Worlds, which was by Jeff Waynes. And you mentioned that it was a childhood thing for you.
Yes, actually, strangely enough, my parents were really into it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they used to play it, like, sometimes every weekend.
Oh, wow.
Coming down the stairs in the morning... My dad would be listening to, like, Thunderchild or something.
That's so cool.
It was, yeah, genuinely really strange. I don't know where the obsession came from.
I'm not afraid to say that I generally go to sleep with that soundtrack playing.
I don't blame you.
It's really, really cool. So, War of the Worlds, for those who don't know, is by an English author, H.G. Wells. It consists of 287 pages and was published in 1898. So, I don't know if you've actually read the book. I certainly haven't. I know I'm letting myself down a bit by doing a whole War of the Worlds show.
I know. I feel like I've failed in my research.
That's all right. I mean, it's not part of, I suppose, modern-day literature, so...
Exactly. It wasn't on the English course, so...
Although saying that, apparently it has been on some English courses. There are some that have studied War of the Worlds as part of their English.
Nice. Like, they probably should. I mean, it is a classic. I mean, if you think about how many remakes they've done,
yeah,
there's got to be something in it.
Absolutely. And it would have been so much better than Mice and Men or Animal Farm.
That's true. They're overplayed.
Yeah. So War of the Worlds, as an idea for this podcast, was definitely brought about by the BBC doing a reboot series of War of the Worlds, based during the time of the 19th century, leading up to, I suppose, modern day times, consisting of three episodes. I think they were about 50 minutes apiece. And let's first go into what your thoughts were about the series.
Well, where to begin? I mean, I think it was definitely pretty well cast. We were saying earlier, you know, you've got a couple of guys in there from Game of Thrones.
Yep.
You've got everybody's famous favourite Inspector Lestrade from Sherlock.
Yeah. Then you had the really attractive lady from Poldark.
Oh, Poldark. That's right. So basically everybody famous in the BBC.
Yeah. And most British actors, yeah.
Exactly.
I personally found that the first episode was really difficult to get into. I did actually rewatch the whole series today as well. I did a load of War of the Worlds research. I re-listened to that soundtrack twice. Listened to the first time the broadcast and the series. And I found it a bit easier to watch the first time, second time around. But the first time, I feel like everything happened a bit too suddenly, and the characters were very difficult to be interested in.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I think sometimes they could be a little bit two-dimensional, but I do think it's a show that improves once you kind of relax and get into it a bit.
Mm.
I found this the same with the first episode. I hadn't seen any kind of trailers for it on the BBC or anything like that, so I was thinking, are they going to do it sort of set in the original time period?
Mm.
Is it going to be set in the 2000s, whenever? So it was a bit of a shock at first when they sort of jumped into it with the original time period and everything.
Mm.
But yeah... I think it grows on you. It's definitely worth a second watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the second watch should definitely be in mind that I suppose I went into War of the Worlds the opposite way I went into Transformers. So Transformers, I went into the films wanting to see robot fights and got human chemistry. And I went into War of the Worlds wanting human chemistry and I got aliens. So, yeah, if you go into it more of a Transformers expectation, I think that's where you, especially with the first episode, you're really greeted with quite a bit of that.
That's an amazing comparison, which I was not expecting. How do you think the makers of the show would feel if they Transformers?
Well, yeah, it's still a popular series as much as they butchered it with their, sixth film now or however many they're on to.
Yeah, what are we on now? Like, Revenge of the Dark Side of the, you know...
of the Fallen Moon.
For the Fallen Moon.
So, something that I didn't realise, but whilst doing my research, was that, especially within the radio show, there's one element of War of the Worlds that was absent from it. And I was wondering if you might be able to figure out what it was. One element of the invasion.
That's far beyond me.
Okay. It's the red weed. It's not mentioned once. So, the red weed, if I bring out my show notes for the red weed. So, the red weed, it has many different variants within the different adaptations of War of the World. So the only two variants I'm guessing you've seen is the 2005 film and then the current series.
That's right, yeah.
So the red weed has also been referred to as the red creeper or the red swamp, and is something that is... its purpose is something that would be cause for discussion. So in your... with your understanding of War of the Worlds, what would you imagine the red weed's purpose was?
Well, I think in an ideal world, it would be some kind of Day of the Triffids kind of situation where you have a triple threat, if you like. You know, you've got the aliens to deal with, the killer plants they bring with them, and also the mad actual humans you're trying to survive with.
Yeah.
But I think in reality, it's just a kind of spooky-looking plant.
Okay, so some believe that it is a food source for the Martians, although they've never actually been seen harvesting it. And some say that it was the Martians attempting to recreate the vegetation on Earth, and that was what aided in giving Mars its red appearance. Once exposed to water, its growth is described to explode outwards and is said to grow purple at night. And in the narrative, The War of the Worlds, a gentleman did actually attempt to eat it, and he commented that it had a metallic taste, which is interesting, seeing as what was the tripods in the 2005 War of the Worlds film using to fertilise the red weed?
Well, without even knowing the answer, I'm going to guess blood.
Yes, blood cloud that they were using. Oof. It's definitely the hardest part. Well, there are two hard parts of that film to watch, is the blood clouds and then the scene where the main protagonist, I can't remember what character name they gave the main protagonist, but his daughter, when she went down to the river and went to pee and then saw the first body go down and then all those bodies. That was such a difficult scene to watch upon first viewing.
Surprisingly harrowing, actually, for a 2000 American film.
Absolutely. So I suppose the metallic taste would be the kind of iron that you taste in people's blood.
Yeah, I mean, that's what people always say when they're writing in books, you know, people taste like a metallic, coppery kind of flavour.
Yeah, they think blood. So yeah, lastly, in the 2005 film, it would seem that the tripods captured humans and they would drain them of their blood and then spray the blood out as clouds when they wanted to use it as fertiliser. So, in the series, we got a different look at the aliens, but it was more true to the musical adaptation of War of the Worlds, where I can't remember if they actually gave the main protagonist in the musical version a name. I know you had Nathaniel, who was the crazy guy who thought that it was like a Satanist attack or whatever, and his wife got crushed by the house. But yeah, I don't remember if he actually had a name, but he described the Martians as coming out and then actually eating the flesh of humans, which is close to, or pretty much exact to what we got in the series. Whereas in the War of the Worlds 2005 film, we didn't actually see the Martians feed on the humans. We just got our own, I guess, idea of what they might be doing to them.
Yeah, you were just kind of left to your own imagination there. You could make it up for yourself, which I think in a way is actually often the scarier of the options, because anything's possible in your own mind.
I suppose they went for a bit of a kind of Cloverfield approach with it, where I can't remember if this is true or not, but I remember someone saying, because it's been a while since I've seen the 2005 film, that you don't actually see the Martians in the 2005 film. It's the extended edition that you see them, and it's just when the capsule opens and all that flesh or whatever comes spewing out, and then the alien kind of reaches out and then dies. But again, it's kind of like a Cloverfield thing where you don't see it happening, but your mind fills in the gaps of what's going on.
Exactly. I think that's far more sinister that way, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that I feel like the series lost a bit with its alien stuff. Because there was nothing left to the imagination. We saw them.
Exactly. They showed a bit too much, I think. They gave too much away.
What did you think of the alien's design in the series? With a three-legged spider. Which I don't know if in itself is a spider.
Well, spider or not. I think it's pretty true to, like you were saying earlier, to the musical version. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of how you picture it in your mind. It's quite stylized.
Mm.
I don't know if it fits entirely with what the show was going for.
Yeah.
Because you have that whole kind of old-fashioned, slightly industrial feel to it, and the aliens were quite jarring in a sense with that.
Mm.
But maybe that was actually their intention, to make them feel really, really alien.
Really
stood out, yeah.
And something that I wanted to bring up at some point during the show, so I'll do it now, is that, and I always come back to it with the... whenever I talk about aliens or things with Area 51, is the quote from the film Paul, where they talk to Paul and they say, "You look exactly like we imagined you would look like." And it's like, well, yes, because images of me have been dripped into the media so that when we do eventually appear on Earth, it's going to be less jarring. So I found it interesting that they went for a very different approach with the Martians.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to shake things up, you know. I mean, that I think that's something that people don't always take advantage of when there's any kind of remake or adaptation.
Mm.
Sometimes they can play things a bit too safe and they don't take the risks that, you know, I think really that they had the license for.
Mm. So let's go into a bit of the science behind Mars and some of the stuff behind War of the Worlds. So the minimum, from my research at least, the minimum distance from Earth to Mars is supposedly 33.9 million miles. Or 54.6 million kilometres. Of course, the journey time for a craft from Earth to Mars is relative, depending, of course, on the capabilities of the craft, but it has been documented as between 150 to 300 day worth of travel. And that I lost myself a bit there. But it brings me to something that was reported on the news. Wasn't there meant to be a group of explorers sent out on a essentially suicide mission to Mars? Or no return?
I feel like I keep seeing stories online about, you know, some sort of elusive billionaire planning to start a colony on Mars, you know, any day now. I don't know if any of those rockets have actually launched yet. I'll believe it when I see it.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. It's a very long holiday, though, you know, the trip by itself.
Mm.
I think it could be a good setup for some kind of futuristic version of The Shining. People trying to avoid cabin fever inside a rocket.
We almost got that with a Doctor Who, I think it was a Christmas special, I'm not too sure, The Waters of Mars? Tennant?
Yeah.
With the whole kind of water makes people, there's a sentient thing in itself. Wasn't it part of the Ice Warrior lore? I'm going into my Doctor Who lore.
I think they tied it back in, didn't they, to like an episode 30 years ago. But yeah. Evil water.
Mm. So the planet does suffer with planet-wide dust storms, which are rare, but they do happen, and planet can be covered with a haze which lasts for weeks, but for the most part it's only one area, and the storms last from a few days all the way to a few weeks, carrying small particles of dust as fast as anything from 33 to 66 miles per hour. The atmosphere of Mars is much thinner than Earth's and is made up of a gas layer. It does contain traces of levels of water vapor and oxygen, which I find interesting because oxygen, my science is bad, but isn't it relying on a presence of foliage to produce that oxygen?
I think there's several ways it can happen. It can definitely come out of plants, but I mean, you know, you can also get oxygen sort of, maybe it's frozen and it comes to Mars via an asteroid or something like that.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm also no scientist, so I'm sure there's people out there who know way more about this than I do.
There was a theory that I came up with, but I don't know whether it's relying on plants being there or not, but taking it to an aquatic place, because I always seem to do that, is that a body of water that's stagnant won't have much oxygen in it, and if there are oxygen-breathing creatures within, they'll use up the oxygen and then die. But if the water is given some kind of movement, then it gains oxygen. You're looking at me like I'm insane. No, that can't be right.
I trust you, it's just...
So, but again, I don't know whether that relies on oxygen in the air, primarily, to then be added to the water.
Where does the water come from if the water's moving? Is it just bringing it from, like, further up the river?
I really don't know, because I think that you can give, say, a tank or a pond oxygen so long as there's movement in it.
So really what we're saying is we need to put Mars in a big tank.
But my theory is coupled with the fact that there's levels of water vapour in the atmosphere, and perhaps if that water vapour is dense enough, it could then create its own oxygen for its movement.
I think it could. I mean, basically, if we were going to start terraforming Mars, I mean, you know, we wouldn't be starting from scratch here.
No.
I think there's a pretty decent base for us to start with.
Because wasn't there water discovered on Mars?
Yeah, I think it's got ice, certainly at the caps. So, you know, if we were going to land at one of the poles, we can just start melting that ice, and then we should have water, and then maybe we can get some oxygen from that too. Again, not a scientist.
Unfortunately, I haven't got the information on terms of the temperature, but because, from what I remember from my research, because the atmosphere isn't dense enough, there isn't capability of holding in heat, so their nights are very cold, and I think their days aren't much better.
So we're going to have to wear big coats, basically.
Yes, big coats and very
old. When Elon Musk sends us all to Mars.
But taking it back to War of the Worlds, I was entertaining the idea of what would happen in the present day if something like that were to happen, but still within England. I know we've had a similar, I suppose, representation of it in 2005 War of the Worlds, but what would happen in England? And how long it would be until the government would start to send in their heavy guns.
I think these days the government would probably just deny it was happening and then, until they'd already been taken over.
Yeah. I just thought, and also what the people would do as well, because you've got situations where people from all kinds of creeds and backgrounds that wouldn't usually work together with large events of a devastating nature start to work together.
That's true. I mean, you have the power of the internet these days. It'll be much easier for people to actually still communicate if there's any kind of infrastructure left.
Mm.
You know, they could maybe get things organised.
Yeah. And talking about things being organised, I know we've covered this in Better Show before, but I thought I'd cover it again. The whole storming of Area 51. Did you see much of the coverage on that?
I saw a little bit of the coverage. I saw some pretty unhappy looking soldiers sitting outside.
There were quite a few amazing shots of all the SUVs and things like that that had turned up on the outskirts. But one fantastic shot, and I don't know if it was anywhere near to their actual main entranceway, but there was a kid on a... I was almost going to say Zimmer frame, but that's not right. What's the two-wheeled mode of transport with the handlebars?
And it's... Two-wheeled handlebars, yeah. And it's not a scooter?
No. Segway.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Like, approaching the gate on a Segway.
That's amazing.
And I wasn't sure if they were, like, sending in the pawns first. Gun him down, he's got a regular form of transport. The Men in Black, we can't trace him. But I just thought it was an extraordinary event that was brought together by, like you say, the people...
That's really true. I mean,
the social media.
Things like that can happen so quickly nowadays. I don't think anyone's prepared for that.
So do you think the Martians don't have a chance because as soon as Twitter became a thing, they...
That's true. I mean, clearly the Area 51 guards weren't prepared, so I don't think aliens stand a chance against that kind of thing. I mean,
no.
You know, are we going to have War of the Worlds 2 where they're taken out by a guy on a Segway? Maybe. I don't know.
Talking about War of the Worlds 2, there, as far as I'm aware, there is actually a War of the Worlds 2, but it's a series.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
Based in the aftermath of the attack. And as you probably remember from the musical adaptation, the lead in that does actually speculate on a possible second invasion from the Martians because they had established the conditions on Earth and don't eat the flesh as rule one, and that they would probably then be able to do a secondary attack. Wasn't there... It was a bit unclear in the musical version, but there's a segment where... there's a shuttle, or I suppose probe landing on the surface of Mars, and then they start to see the green flashes. So I wasn't sure if that was set after the... I mean, I'm guessing it would have to be in the 19th century. And then, I guess, seeing the Martians then prepping their next invasion.
Yeah, I mean, I like that kind of thing, because you have that sort of ominous threat kind of permanently hanging over your head.
Yeah.
I mean, that's proper drama.
So, with the first attack from the Martians, if I'm remembering my lore correctly, it was flashes from Mars over the course of about 10 days. And they recreated that quite nicely in the series as well, because they retained the name of the scientist. I don't know if it's in the book, but certainly within the musical adaptation, Ogilvy the astronomer, threw into the series, although he was commented as being a bit more of a chemist than than an astronomer.
Jack of all trades.
Which is what he says. And that's something else that I wanted to cover as well, is the stuff from the musical version that they bring straight into the series. So the artillery man says in the musical version, bows and arrows against the lightning, but it's the, I guess, the captain of whichever vessel that's escorting the boats out, the destroyers, he says bows and arrows. It was like bows and arrows against lightning. Something interesting, though, that they did change was that the artillery man who died during the bombardment against the second asteroid, who burst into flames, he didn't come back.
Ooh.
But in the story, he did. Because there was comments about him surely having burnt alive. But of course, he didn't. Or in that, he didn't. But in the series, he did.
Made a lucky escape.
Yeah, from that white lightning or white fire.
Yeah.
So, in terms of War of the World, because it's been brought back to the public eye in consumable media, is there any adaptation you personally would like to see?
If I had a wish list.
Yeah, like set perhaps at a different time, or...
I think, like you were mentioning, I think maybe something set in the modern day.
Yeah.
I think that could be really, really interesting, because now that we've had sort of one in the early 2000s, but it was set in America, which I think kind of threw people off a little bit.
Yeah.
And now you've had the original, super sort of classic remake, British, oldie timey. I think British in the modern times, and I think really you ticked all the boxes then. And if they can bring back some of the star power they've had with this BBC adaptation, I think they could be onto a winner.
They need to bring Tennant in.
Yes, exactly.
Although Tennant's doing a... I've got to remember the name of the serial killer now. Dennis Nilsson. He's doing a Dennis Nilsson Netflix thing.
He's keeping busy, isn't he?
He definitely is, yeah. There was that time where he was out of the loop a bit, where he was doing Virgin Media ads, but now he's actually back into the public eye, which is nice. And I'm definitely looking forward to that, because he's a serial killer that I've been looking into quite recently. But yeah, it's interesting you should bring up the whole thing about the States, because that's where the original broadcast was set. It was an attack in Jersey. Is it Jersey? I'm going to say it's Jersey. Fairly sure it's Jersey. Should be in my notes, but it isn't. Yeah, I want to say yes. Yeah, Jersey in America, yeah.
I trust you.
So, yeah, I suppose that's where they got the go-ahead in their own way to do the 2005 film.
Yeah, that's true. That gives them a good in, doesn't it?
I don't know if there are any other places in the world I want a War of the Worlds to be set, just so we get a different kind of idea of how people would react.
Yeah, it was like a super unique location.
A bit further flung than that. Australia.
Yeah, anywhere in the world. Let's go with Scotland.
So, darting back with the alien design, but in terms of the tripods, which have always had a very kind of unique design to them, out of all the variants that we've had, is there one that stands out to you as your personal favourite?
Is it unfair if I choose the one in the musical?
No, absolutely not, because it's very cool. Isn't it? Like, it's got a front cannon, and then it's got this green glass cabin.
It's just iconic, and I feel like it's kind of been immortalised. In art history, is the kind of the way that they're portrayed. I just feel like that's kind of seared into people's minds.
Yeah.
As the way that it's seen, and everything since then has been an adaptation of that.
And also, darting back to what we said about the spiders that aren't spiders, I feel like there's a connection between that and one of the designs of the tripods within the musical, not the war machine tripods, but the human harvesting tripods that are spiders with metal baskets on the back that they run at people with, and then they collect people and fling them in the back. So I enjoyed seeing that connection there, even if it wasn't intentional. Because I suppose within the War of the Worlds series, we only got one variant of the tripod. We never got anything outside of it.
Yeah, that's true. You don't get to see the whole fleet.
No. I can't remember in the 2005 one whether there were any variants of the tripods. I think there was a larger one.
Yeah, you just get medium and large. Medium and grande.
The big old one that just knocks over the ship because it just so happens to be under it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to rewatch the 2005 because it has some visuals in it which can't be matched by anything I've seen before or after. I think one of my favourite moments, and I think it shows the level of desperation that the humans were going through at that point, is when they get to, they're all crowding together and they all get to that rail crossing.
Yeah.
And then the barriers go down and then that train goes past and it's just all on fire. And then the barriers go back up. It's like, well, that was emotionally disturbing. Let's carry on.
Yeah, exactly. Because what can you do in that situation? You know, they've got to press on, but you know, what can they do?
It's just another reminder of how dire their situation is.
Yeah, just grim.
And I think the War of the Worlds TV series is the one that we've, at least visually speaking, is the one where the Martians have won the most or have progressed the furthest.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to judge, isn't it?
Because at least in the 2005 film, it was only in the countryside, as far as I remember, that the Red Weed actually took over.
True.
And then in the War of the Worlds TV series, we got that one shot of Earth from orbit, and it was the whole planet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that shows kind of the whole progress. With other adaptations, it's a bit harder to tell exactly how far they've progressed.
Mm. And the... The red weed spread in that was slightly different because it was the black cloud that they were releasing, wasn't it, that caused the growth of the red weed in the first place. And there was that fantastic shot where they were escaping through the tunnels and they had the minister with them.
Oh god, yeah.
And he was
and they're calling to him to come back down.
Yeah.
And he just gets swallowed up.
Yeah, and there's that moment where he's just sort of oozing out of his mouth and eyes. Where he's babbling about the possibility of getting a tripod for the Allies. But I suppose that's also a nice dart back to what the military man was saying in the musical version, where he's singing about how they're going to burrow underground and create a civilization, and then they're going to get a tripod and fight back, which is very kind of Independence Day-y.
Yeah, that's true, actually, isn't it? You know, the only way to beat them is using their own technology.
Yeah. And I think it was, because I've never seen the original film, isn't it a black and white stop motion film for the most part?
Ooh, you call it, I'm not sure, I honestly couldn't say.
Okay, well, from bits and bobs that I've seen, in that they actually capture a few tripods and then they have it as part of their...
See, that's a dramatic twist, like you don't see that nowadays, do you?
No.
That's pretty cool.
I suppose they wanted to give it a bit more of a desperate element.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's more about the human element and the sort of desperation for survival, that kind of thing.
Mm.
Less of the Independence Day gung-ho. We're
going to steal... Thankfully, we steal have this base that the aliens don't know about, despite the fact all we do is capture aliens.
And yeah, exactly.
We have Data from Star Trek as the lead crazy scientist.
Yeah, they just somehow accidentally missed this one.
On a slight sidetrack, did you ever see Independence Day 2?
I think thankfully I didn't.
Ah, it was trash.
Was it good trash though?
No. Oh. It was bad trash. And you know why it was bad trash? Because Will Smith was not in it. The only appearance he made was a oil painting of him in some corridor. And do you want to know how they justified him not being in it?
How do they justify it? Did they say he'd got a promotion or something? Or
no, worse than that. He died in a training accident.
Oh,
this is Will Smith, the guy that flew just almost Anakin Skywalker-esque a Martian vehicle, or I suppose, sorry, not Martian, taking it back to War of the Worlds, just intergalactic vehicle with no training whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly, and then he gets killed in a training accident.
That's how severe was this training accident?
Exactly, what was he training for?
Like, were they just seeing how long it would take Will Smith to die?
Was he trying to swim to the moon or something? Like...
Right, okay, boys, this guy seems indestructible and he might be a threat to the American people, so we're going to send him up in one of our Harrier jets and then we're going to launch every missile we have.
Sounds like a government cover-up, actually. He was too powerful.
He was too powerful. He was too much for Poe Dameron, so we had to take him down.
Exactly.
well, let's see how far we've got into this episode of War of the Worlds, first of all. So we're gonna let's finish up this this episode by, I suppose, because we do have a graphic novel variant of War of the Worlds, but outside of the visual media, is there anything that you'd like to see of War of the Worlds in current media? So, not just graphic novels. So when I say visual media, anything outside of television and film?
I think maybe actually a remake of the radio version.
Yeah? Oh, the original broadcast.
Yeah, which I think,
we haven't covered that yet. We need to do that. We'll do that before we finish.
I think some kind of remake of the radio version, maybe in podcast form, so you can split it up into episodes.
That would be cool. I suppose that would be a very kind of modern version of it, because then
exactly,
it'd be like, we have this guest on and he's an artillery man. How's it going down there? Everyone's dead. Oh.
Exactly. Things have come full circle.
Yeah. So going into the original broadcast, and there's a myth that exists about it, and not many people know, is that apparently the whole panic around the broadcast is actually not so severe as the rumours would have us believe. It would seem that that was all down to the American press and saying that there was a country, or I suppose nationwide, freak out due to the presence of the broadcast itself, which of course there wasn't. And actually during the broadcast itself, the presenter says at least three times that this is a adaptation of their H.G. Wells.
Yeah, so they got fair warning, but
they did.
So you're saying the whole thing was a media hoax, really?
Just
drumming up news stories.
It'd be interesting to see what happened during the time. It's like, oh, all our kids disappeared as well during this time. But
how mysterious!
It must have been Martians. But something interesting that I saw, and I wasn't sure if it was just the format of that particular broadcast or whether that was the format of the times, but it was almost like, we have this guy that's in the studio and it's really dire out there. Oh, by the way, this is studio so-and-so and we're presenting from whatever. So what have you found? Oh, by the way, this is studio from so-and-so and we're presenting from... It was almost every single moment that they had to remind us which studio they were from and where they were presenting from. But I suppose that was just the format at the time, because I suppose it's the same with radio now, that you don't know when people are tuning in, so you want to keep people up to date with that.
Yeah, true. I mean, especially in those days, you know, there's no little like screen in the car or anything to tell you what radio station you're on.
Well done for tuning in. You've had to go to the top of your house and you've had to turn that antenna, which is incredibly stressful. Many people have died trying, and well done for catching our radio show. By the way, we're all going to die.
Exactly. Just a little hint for later.
Well, thank you very much, Jordan, for joining us for this part one of War of the Worlds. It's been an absolute blast.
Well, thank you for having me.
No problem. And you know where to find us on our usual better show, social meds. So we'll see you guys next week for either War of the Worlds or Jack the Ripper Part 2. See you guys then.